Dear friends of Jesus Christ, today obviously is Thanksgiving Day, and we have come here to give thanks. But now I wonder how we can do that without it being a mere formality or perfunctory. How can we ignite the fires of gratitude so that we will truly be thankful? I wonder whether you would just now remind yourself of a moment when you experienced thankfulness. I mean, when you think of that moment, can you think of what went into it? I mean, wasn't it often this? Something triggered a parting of the clouds, and you felt bathed, as it were, in this wonderful, warm light that melted your heart, and it welled up within you this gratitude, not even for anything specifically, but just in general, this wonderful sense of thanksgiving. Now, I'm wondering, you see, whether for this time together we could somehow part the clouds so that we would again feel bathed in this light, this grace that would melt our hearts, so that welling up within us would be gratitude and thanksgiving. It struck me again as I was reading this for the last couple of days how Paul models for us this sort of thanksgiving. I mean, he starts in verse 2, "We always give thanks to God for all of you and mention you in our prayers, constantly remembering before our God and Father your work of faith, labor of love, and steadfastness of hope in our Lord Jesus Christ." Now, when you look at that expression of thanks, you'll see, I think, three ingredients to this thanksgiving. There is an acknowledgement, there's a remembering, and there's a mentioning. There's an acknowledgement. The acknowledgement underscores, I think, a profound assumption that even brings us here. And that assumption is that we thank God. I mean, Paul does not thank the Thessalonians, first of all, for their works of faith and their labor of love and their steadfastness of hope. But he thanks God, and the thanking of God is an acknowledgement that behind or in or through the work of faith and the labor of love and the steadfastness of hope is the presence and work of God. So that, for instance, I mean, we do this, right? We gather around at home at table, and we thank God for the bread that we're about to eat. Even though we realize fully well that this food came from the fields and was brought to the stores, and we purchased it. But behind all that, behind the rain and the sunshine, behind the farmer and the trucker and the grocer, we say there is God. We acknowledge God, and so in all actions, we give thanks to God. We give thanks to God. And this thanksgiving, see, our thanksgiving here, it is an acknowledgement that we live by grace, that we are dependents on God. I mean, we do that every Sunday, but also on this holiday. We gather simply to affirm that what we have and what we enjoy, what we are, is a gift from God. You know, at one of the liturgies that we use at funerals has two lines that I always like very much. We say in that liturgy, "We praise you, God. We praise you for all in him or her that was good, faithful, and loving. And we bless you for the grace that flowed from you through her or him into our lives." Always we see it coming that the source of it is from God. Now, of course, not everyone shares that conviction. And even you may not be always, I mean, we sometimes do not fully appreciate that all good things come to us from God. This past week, on Tuesday, there was an item in the news that really caught me. It was about a forum held in California It was to be a debate or a discussion of science and religion, but it was obvious that most of the scientists there, world renowned, were vehemently anti-Christian. And at a certain point, according to the report, the discussion turned almost virulent. I mean, they became hostile and wanted to go after religion. And they were equating religion, you see, with the kind of stuff that flies airplanes into tall buildings. But anyway, in this article, it said it wasn't quite clear where the shift came. Perhaps, now I'm quoting, perhaps the turning point occurred at a more solemn moment when Neil Tyson, director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York City and an advisor to the Bush administration on space exploration, hushed the audience with heartbreaking photographs of newborns misshapen by birth defects. And he suggested this Tyson, Mr. Tyson, that this was testimony that a blind nature and not an intelligent overseer is in control. A blind nature. Well, that of course goes for the jugular to a service like this. A blind nature. But I reflected on that a good deal, and maybe you have already too, but it struck me a couple of things. First, I wondered, these newborns, misshapen by birth defects, what would they think if later on in life they learned that they were used as testimony that we were the result of blind nature? And by blind nature, I take him to mean uncaring, unintelligent, unpurposeful. I mean, I was remembering somebody, this is a young teenager who was a quadriplegic. And she was described as somebody who had a small voice, no use of arms or legs, but a good mind. And one day a social worker said to this young woman in her wheelchair whether she wouldn't as soon be done with it. And the young woman turned to the social worker and said, "I wouldn't have missed being for anything." I mean, it is true. It is true. You know, you and I, I mean, the world is ambivalent. And whether your hearts well up with thanksgiving depends where you look for your evidence. And you and I, we need to choose. And you can choose, I suppose, a newborn misshapen by birth defects and take that as your reading of the universe, or you can go elsewhere. But you do need to choose, you see? And of course, for you and me, it's not finally healthy babies, though they are wonderful testimonies. But we would say, no, we take our reading. The reason why we are sure that God is the source of all good is because we take our reading of God in Jesus Christ. I did think one other thought about this article. It struck me that you take one of these newborns misshapen by birth defects and isolate them, and they are a great tragedy. But you place such a child in the care of a family that loves him, and in the supporting care of a community, and what you often have is not a tragedy, but almost a miracle. I mean, our David Knoll would be a testimony to that. But the thing is, for you and me, I think to feel deep down that we have reasons to be thankful, we have to, first of all, be utterly convinced of this acknowledgement that God is the source of all good things. We acknowledge that. God, you are the source of all that is good. So that first of all, in order for us to be thankful, we acknowledge that the good, this wonderful chance at being is from God. But it's not just acknowledging, it's also remembering. And what Paul remembers, of course, about these Thessalonians is very specific. He remembers them not vaguely, but he remembers the work that their faith produced. The labor that was prompted by their love. The steadfastness and endurance that was inspired by their hope. And when you read his letter, he's quite specific about the ways in which their that their faith and love and hope have shaped him. And he gives thanks to God for all of these ways. And I was thinking that if this is a good service, a large part of it will be due to the fact that you and I take some time to think specifically about the way that the grace of God has flowed through people in your lives into your life. It's this remembering specifically what it is for which we are grateful. Kelly Clark, a member of our church, of course, wrote a book back in 1997 entitled When Faith Is Not Enough. And in that book, he has a chapter called Moments of Dark and then Moments of Light. And then, of course, in writing the book Moments of Light, he remembers specific things that parted the clouds and warmed his heart. And let me read to you. I don't know whether the Clarks are here, but anyway, and this is 1997, so things have changed. And anyway, let me read it to you. This is what Kelly writes. When my son Will was born, my wife and I were living in a tiny house. We were so excited about the birth of our first child, however, that we did not mind sharing our only bedroom with him. Our tiny roommate made sounds while he slept, sounds that a non-parent might have seen strange or disturbing, but to us, they were music. We would often wake up and in our half-sleep anxiously listen for his baby singing, or at least his quiet breathing, and then drift off to sleep, satisfied. Now, Will did not sleep peacefully through every night, so we would swap turns walking with him in our living room. One evening, the moonlight cascaded through a window and illuminated the face of my son. I was so grateful for Will that I lifted him up into the light and gave thanks to the Divine Father. I deeply felt Will was a gift, and gifts have givers. At that moment, I believed that the Divine Father had given me his child, the gift of a son. And Kelly goes on, I now have three children, Will, Emily, and Evan, who are lights of my life. I can scarcely look at the three playing with one another, laughing, stirring in my lap, caring for one another, taking a bath or sleeping without being immensely grateful. I have been gifted with three angels. Make no mistake here, they are often fallen angels. But they are moments of light that melt the heart and cause welling up within us a deep gratitude for God and his goodness to us. And so we need to remember. We acknowledge God as the source of all that is good. We remember the specific ways in which his grace has flowed through others into our lives. And then finally, of course, Paul mentions them. We say, bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. And now finally, we are to count them one by one. We are to mention them, to simply speak them. I mean, you know, as we've done now for many years, after the sermon and the moment of silence, we're asking you to come forward and mention ways in which God's grace has come to you, in which you've experienced what that parting of the clouds and the light of God's grace just bathe you in light. In mentioning it, these testimonies. I mean, every now and again, people will say to me, we need more testimonies at church. And I understand that. You know why? Because it's so good to hear good things about God from others. I mean, you know how that is. It's the way it is sometimes with your family or with the church or with the institution that you work for. You hear that somebody is saying good things about it, and it just, you know, you say, yes, yes, that is exactly right. And it enlarges your appreciation for the person or the institution or the place where you work. And so for us to come together, we need now and again to hear somebody mention how God has been good in their lives. You know, I mean, it's sort of like when you're living in Michigan and it's, you know, you have these days. Today is terrific. But you have these days and stretches of days where it's all overcast and dark. And then sometimes it can almost be reassuring that at least somewhere else, the sun is shining. It is there. It's going to be okay. And one of these days, the clouds will part here. Well, sometimes you can be in kind of a drag. You can be in a life that feels overcast. And then you're here. And instead of being envious or jealous, you can say, you know, God is gracious, and I hear it, and I will wait patiently for the clouds to part over where I am and where I make my living. And so we acknowledge, to be in thanksgiving, we acknowledge God is the giver of good things. We remember the ways in which God has been good to us, and then we mention it. We speak to one another. We give testimonies as to how God's grace has entered your life. What shape did that grace have? So let's have a moment of silence, and then I would invite you to come forward. And it doesn't need to be dramatic or long. Just tell us that God's grace has come into your life, and how that grace has come, and for which you are grateful. Okay?